their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado. This is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey, I'm Jason Odell.
I'm Rick Walker.
And this is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. Thanks for joining us today. How's it going, Rick?
It's going well. I think we're going to do a compliment to last week's episode, which was on telephoto lenses and how to use them, compose with them, creative ideas. So this one will be wide angles.
Hey, there you go. Hopefully everyone enjoyed the discussion of telephoto lenses last week, and we'd love to see your photos out on our Facebook page if you've got any. So let's talk wide angle though today. And what do we mean by wide angle when we're talking about, you know, and let me stop for a second. We talk a lot about focal lengths being wide or long or whatever, and we're usually referring to them in terms of 35 millimeter format. So right. So let's just keep, you know, so last week we were talking about telephoto being 300 millimeters. We mean 300 on, or its equivalent on a 35 millimeter format, you know, what Nikon would call FX, whatever, you know, some people call full frame, although I don't like that term. So what we're going to talk about today, when we say wide angle, we're talking about focal lengths, well, anything shorter than 50 millimeters used to be considered wide angle. But what we're really talking about is 24 millimeter equivalent and shorter and wider, shorter than that. So on a full frame 35 millimeter format camera, you can shoot with 35, you can shoot with 28. Those are not really wide. 24 starts getting wide. And when you go shorter than that into the 20, 18, 14 millimeter territory, now you're really talking wide angle stuff as we would describe it.
And things change quickly.
Yes.
Just 24 to 20, things are suddenly different.
Right.
And you have to pay a lot more attention to certain things, which we'll talk about. Perspective effects get much stronger. Even just a few millimeters makes a big difference when you start getting lower.
Yes,
difference between 16 and 14.
Yes.
Is a lot.
And I don't know about you. I mean, when people talk about difficult lenses to use, I think telephoto lenses are difficult to use from a technical perspective. In other words, you need to be supported and use the right shutter speeds and from
they're big and heavy potentially.
Yeah, right. But I think from a creative and compositional standpoint, wide angle lenses are probably the most difficult lenses to use well.
Yes.
I contend that if you asked me, yeah, there's some physical challenges with using a big telephoto lens, but the mental challenges and the photographic challenges of using a wide are really, really strong. They're big challenges.
Yeah. And one of the classic things is someone goes and buys a wide angle zoom and they haven't really shot with, let's just say, a 16 to 35 before.
Mm-hmm.
Inevitably, what will happen on their first shoot is they'll go somewhere and they'll do a landscape and they'll use a wide angle because they, quote, want to get everything in the shot.
Yeah.
And they'll feel really excited and great. And then they'll get home, download the images, and they'll go, bleh. Or someone looking at their images will go, bleh, that's boring. It's everything's little and tiny. And
yes,
I don't know what the subject is, you know?
Right. And so I think you just underscored the two biggest challenges with wide angle lenses. And the first you've already said, which is trying to get everything in the shot can make your shot cluttered and confusing, and now there's no subject and it's just a weak photograph. And then the flip side is with the way wide angle lenses work with their perspective is that you can think of everything getting smaller and getting pushed away from you. It's like, you know, telephoto lenses bring everything closer to you, right? Wide angle lenses are pushing everything away from you, so things get teeny real quickly, and you know, wide open spaces become huge. You know, that it just looks like enormous. Like think of a, you know, a house with a lawn in front of it, right? all of a sudden the lawn becomes this massive expanse and the house looks tiny. Mm-hmm. That can be cool if you do it right, but it can make it really challenging to get a good subject. I think getting a subject with a wide angle lens is really hard if you don't know what to look for.
It takes practice. And, you know, we've talked about this before, but one of the things that you can do with a wide angle lens is really get that effect of differing planes of focus in your shot. You know, the very distinct foreground that's very prominent, you know, flowers and rocks and, or, you know, people or whatever. And it just kind of reaches out and smacks you in the face because it's so prominent. And then a middle ground and a background, and you feel that sense of depth in your shot. But you have to work at it to get that. And one of the things I almost always do is when I'm composing a shot like that, I'll get in very close and, you know, what feels like almost too close. And then I'll take a look at the image on the LCD and it's like, not close enough. And that's when I'll move in a foot closer. And I almost always have to do that.
Let me try to visualize a scene for a moment. I mean, it's place, you know, based on places that we've been. So let's just say you're at a, you know, a lake in the mountains, maybe, whatever. So you've got the lake in front of you, you're on the shore, and then there's trees and maybe a mountain in the, in, you know, on the opposite shore. You're, so you're standing on this shoreline, right? And you, you go in your, you get your camera bag and you take out your super wide zoom, you know, your 14 to 30 or whatever you might have. And you just take a shot just standing there. What you'll end up with is everything sort of gets smooshed into the background. You will have this monster expanse of water in front of you. And then you'll have this little, you know, the horizon of mountains will be small in the background. And that's not visually compelling. Now think about the same thing. Maybe there's a rock or rocks on the shore. It could be pebbles or it could be anything, big rocks, whatever, boulder. Now you take the same scene and you get down on your knees, you know, or your tripod, you've set it very low and you're maybe a foot away from a rock and that rock is in the, you know, that, that boulder is right in the foreground. It's what you're focusing on even. And because the camera is pushing it away, it doesn't look massive. It just, it's just there. And then behind it, you have the middle ground of that lake. And then behind that, you have the trees and the, maybe the mountain peaks in the background or the sky or whatever there might be. Those become more compelling photos because you have those elements and so you're not losing, you know, you're not pushing everything into a background, if you will.
No, you're creating a photograph that feels like you could step into it, right?
That's a good way of describing
it. Yeah, I think that's the psychological effect that happens if you do it right, is the viewer feels like they can actually step into the to the scene, as opposed to the compressed landscape with a telephoto where they don't feel that way at all. It's they like it, but they're looking at it very much from a distance.
Yeah. So. I mean, most people, when they think landscape photography, they think wide angle lenses, and that's true. But when I'm out, but when I'm out in a landscape, because wide angle lenses press everything back, I reach for my super wides, usually in rare, somewhat more rare circumstances. I'm looking for situations where if one is if I have an amazing sky, like there's clouds. And you can point up and the sky becomes almost the subject. So those little mountains on the horizon at the bottom of your frame, not a big deal because the sky above them is tremendous. And and that's a great shot. And then the other situation is anytime I can find that object to use in my foreground that I can actually physically get close to, and then the and it becomes that scene that you can step into like you described. That's kind of how I view it. I don't know about you. I mean, you can use wide angles for any kind of photography, of course. Indoor stuff is typical as well. It's not just landscapes. But you mentioned something, some of the subjects you might use wides for, landscapes, but also architecture, also indoor photography. you know, group photos, whatever it might be, you know, people, anytime you want to convey the sense of size and scale, like you've seen those photos from, you know, inside a stadium maybe, and it just looks massive and you see the whole crowd mm-hmm. there, where the subject is the entire scene, not the players on the field, perhaps. Wide angle lenses, though, can be really tricky to use because of the way they distort, because of the extreme perspective and the way the images get distorted, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and it's not really the lens per se, it's where you're standing relative to the subject, you know, mm-hmm. and close proximity. That's the thing that really does it. It's not the focal length per se, it's just getting so dang close, and some of the angles that you can be at relative to a subject that's, you know, on the edge of the frame. If you think about trying to look at it, that subject, through the periphery of your vision, you can imagine why it looks funny. You're looking at it from an angle, you know, mm-hmm. not the normal view. But converging lines and buildings and stuff can be tricky at times. Those are shots that can look interesting, although I often find that shots that I think are okay when I look through the viewfinder don't look quite as good when I look at them later. I'm sure you've had that experience.
Yeah, as well. And you get that perspective, you know, there's the lines, you know, the angles start to get pretty extreme, and buildings will look like they're tipping over unless you're shooting them exactly horizontal, you know, from a distance. You know, as soon as you, basically with a wide angle lens, as soon as you point your camera a little bit up or a little bit down, you're going to start to see those lines start to do funny things. They'll no longer be parallel. They'll start to converge or diverge depending on the angle. Right. And that's something that can be interesting. And in an abstract sense, it can be really cool because it just renders things differently in your frame. Or it can be really sort of disturbing because it just doesn't look right, because buildings are tipping over and what is this, and it's not right. And traditionally the way you correct that in the days of gone by were to use something like a tilt shift lens, where you can actually, you know, shift that lens and get the lines to look a little bit more parallel. But you can also do a lot of this work in post, right, Rick?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially with higher resolution cameras. Got plenty of pixels to play with, and doing it in Photoshop or Lightroom or whatever you're using, it can actually work really well. The one tip I would give, though, is be careful about completely correcting the verticals.
Yeah.
It often looks disturbing when you do that. You know, people go, there's something about this photo.
Right.
It does not look right. You want to leave at least a little in there, and you know how much, that's for you to figure out.
I think our brains are just sort of naturally used to seeing a little bit of that perspective distortion.
Sure, because okay. We see it. Yeah,
right.
We look at something.
So it's okay. That's one of the challenges just with the optics of wide angle lenses, especially when you get close to your subject. But you know, another thing about wide angle lenses is that they produce, because of the short focal lengths, they produce pretty large depth of field just by themselves. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to stop down too much most of the time to get just about everything in focus in your scene. And that can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing. Just depends on what you're trying to do. Most, you know, snapshots and vacation shots, it's nice to have everything in focus, but you got to be really careful that when you have that much depth of field, overlapping subjects will you know, blend together because they're all in focus. They're all, mm-hmm. or they all appear in focus, and that can lead to some challenges with subject isolation. Again, another reason why we like to get close to our subject and push things farther away that are in the distance, it creates that separation in the frame, even though the depth of field is quite large.
And one thing I'll just mention quickly, too, that I was thinking about when we were talking stuff a few minutes ago, little trick you can do with wide angles. And it's certainly a landscape thing, but you could use it in other contexts too. And it's the idea of look for puddles of water.
Mm. Yep.
Because if you have a really wide angle lens, you can get down very low and right on top of that puddle. And if you've got an interesting background behind it that's reflecting in it, you can make that puddle turn into a lake.
That's true. Good point.
And it is a tremendous fun, and it works remarkably well. And it doesn't matter if it's, you know, a puddle on a prairie or in the mountains, or it's just a little patch of water along the ocean. They all work. And getting down low, you can turn those little puddles into huge bodies of water that are very interesting in terms of yes. shapes and reflections and everything.
Yeah, and in fact, you can do it in cities too, urban stuff. Puddle of water on the street, and then you got buildings reflected in.
I might have a shot of the Empire State Building in a puddle.
That's cool.
I'm pretty sure I do.
Well, it's all good. But you know, one of the things too, and just talking about the depth of field, you know, some manufacturers make wide-angle primes that are fairly fast. You know, you'll see the 20 millimeter 1.8 or the 24 millimeter 1.4. And one reason why they do that, it's not to charge you a ton of money, although that seems to be the case, is because I think with wide-angle lenses, you're used to seeing everything in focus. So having a lens where you can get close to a subject and it's wide perspective, but the background is still somewhat out of focus, is really cool. And that's an interesting look that is hard to get sometimes.
But even with that really fast aperture, like a 1.4, you have to get really close to your subject.
Yes, yes.
Really, really close.
But you get that softness in the background. You're not going to totally blur it, but you'll get that softness, and you get a little bit of that subject isolation. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, when you get really close to your subject, sometimes even when you stop down, your background's still a little bit soft, even with, you know, F8 or F11. And it can be really hard with digital cameras, especially the high resolution ones, shooting. When you start getting above F11 into F16, F22 territory, you will get a little diffraction and softness. So one of the tricks that we'll sometimes do is use focus stacking, where you take multiple shots focused at different points in the image, different planes, and then blend them together using a tool like Photoshop. And for anyone who's interested in learning that technique, there's a free PDF download on my website on how to do that with Photoshop. And it can be useful.
The other thing that you can do if you're stopping down to F16 or let's say F22, which I normally try to avoid, but let's say you do that, a little bit more sharpening can help you in post-processing. The other thing that you can do when you've got a lot of diffraction in your image and it's just a little bit soft all over is, this is a Lightroom technique, but there are similar things in other programs, and it's using just a little bit of dehaze, just a little. You got to be careful. I'm talking like 5.
Yeah, I was going to say 5.
A low amount, but it's a technique you can use for diffraction or lenses that are just not the best. And as long as you stay with a small amount, it's remarkable. So
the good news is you can
sharpen. Bag of tricks.
You can sharpen, so that is a good thing.
You can, yeah.
You can always do that. A few little other things. What do you got?
Well, I think we want to talk about two other things. Mm-hmm. One of them is just thinking about filters when you're using some of these ultra-wide lenses. Some lenses will not allow you to natively mount a filter on them. You can get these adapters, and usually they're huge and cumbersome, and I don't like using them, but they do exist. But you know, thinking about whether or not a lens that you're contemplating will take filters is a good thing to think about. You're probably not going to want to use polarizers for shots with the sky in them because of the unevenness, but you can use them for shots where you've got a waterfall and flowers and all that kind of stuff. And if you have any sky, it's maybe a small portion of the image. That'll work fine. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something to think about, you know, ND filters, neutral density filters that are solid and you're just using to get a slower shutter speed. Those will work fine on a wide angle lens that has filter threads or some way of mounting an ND on.
Because like one of the most well-respected wide-angle zooms is Nikon's 14 to 24. I mean, everyone says it's a great lens, but you cannot put front filters on it. It's got that really large, round, bulbous front element, and it's a built-in lens hood. And the adapters that you need to do that, I mean, honestly, they're so cumbersome that unless you're driving everywhere and doing that, it's just almost not worth having. And it's one of the reasons why I tended to gravitate towards my 16 to 35 for traveling and landscape photography, because I could put a filter on it, usually an ND filter, but whatever. I mean, whether it was a graduated filter or a solid ND or a polarizer, I could use it with that. And it's one of the reasons I like the new 14 to 30 Z lens, although it uses a large filter, 82 millimeter, it still takes them. And those wide angle lenses with the round front elements, and that'll relate a little bit to our next subject. They're really prone to lens flare. It doesn't matter how good the lens is; they're just really prone to it. You can get, if the sun is anywhere near you, you can often get lens flare in these lenses. Which every now and then is a cool artistic thing, but most of the time you want to avoid it. I found my 14 to 24 was a much better indoor lens than it was an outdoor landscape lens, even though it's a great lens.
One thing that I'll mention quickly, and we're not going to do a tutorial on this because it would be a nightmare, but if you're doing something like a wide angle landscape shot and you're using a pretty short focal length, and let's say you've got mountains in the background and they just look a little bit too small in the finished image. One of the things that you can do is in something like Photoshop, use one of the warping functions to stretch the size of just the background. And again, on a high resolution body, this is something that you can get away with more just because you have more pixels to start with. Mm-hmm. But that's a way of restoring how you remember the mountains when you were there. And you can also blend together photographs taken at different focal lengths. I haven't done that. I've seen it done. Certainly works. The first way I described is the simpler way of doing it, and that's probably what I would start with. But just something to think about.
That gets tricky. That gets into moving pixels around.
That's why I said we're not going to turn it into a tutorial.
Yeah. So no discussion of wide-angle lenses would be complete without talking about very specialized example, and that's fisheye lenses.
Mm-hmm.
And these have very short focal lengths, usually 16 millimeters to 8 millimeters or so. And they come in fisheye lenses are really wild. They'll oftentimes give you up to 180 degree angle of view. It's crazy. And they're extremely, they can be really fun. Because you can get that wild curvature, you know, it looks like the surface of the earth, you know, from space kind of curvature distortion, which can be really cool. You can also accidentally get your tripod legs in the shot.
Or your feet,
or whatever. It can be really, really challenging. And they come in two varieties. There's the rectilinear fisheye, which is what Nikon's 16 millimeter fisheye is. I have that one. It's a teeny lens. It's easy to take along with me. It's a good lens. And really with those, if you shoot at F8, pretty much everything is in focus. You have to really screw up your focus for it to not work. And then there's something called a circular fisheye, which actually produces a circle in your image. Instead of getting a full frame edge to edge, you actually get a circle in the center of the image. And one of the lenses that I tested out a few years ago was the Nikon's 8 to 15 millimeter fisheye zoom. And at 8 millimeters, it's a completely circular fisheye. And at 15 millimeters, it's a rectilinear fisheye.
Right.
And those can just be fun. Now, in between, you really don't use it. It's, you have the in-between focal lengths where you have, you know, a circular edge on a rectangular frame. It just doesn't seem to work.
It's awkward.
So it's really a two-position zoom. You either have it at 8 or at 15. And But those can be fun compositionally. And again, those are challenging to work with. But if you're looking for times where that can be useful, I've used them in landscapes, but I've used them in travel, where you're trying to get a different viewpoint of maybe a subject that's been photographed a lot, and you want it to produce a different style of image. Indoors, they work wonderfully, you know, crowd shots, stadium shots. Those are really kind of cool when you want to get this, when you really want to convey the how just expansive something really is.
Yeah. One thing that's, I think, worth pointing out too, you were talking about how no matter what you do, almost everything will be in focus. There are some fisheye lenses that are for APS-C or DX format cameras, micro four thirds, that are really inexpensive. They're manual focus. Mm-hmm. The diaphragm is manual. Doesn't really matter. And they're cheap, you know, just a few hundred dollars. And, you know, these are ones like the Samyangs, Rokinons, et cetera, which are frequently the same lens, just rebranded. They are remarkably good. I've got one of those for my Fujis. I've got one for my micro four thirds cameras. They're tiny, they're lightweight, they're cheap. They're remarkably good in terms of image quality. And focusing, even though it's manual, is so easy.
Right.
It's almost hard to get an image that's out of focus with those. So just something to think about.
I have one for my Fuji as well. It's the one of those Rokinon Sam. They're the same lens. They just slap different names on them, just depending. But yeah, and you can have one of those for, you know, $300 or less sometimes in that $350 range, and they're good. They work. So okay, well,
good.
I think that pretty much covers the wide angle topic. Of course, if our listeners probably have questions for us or examples where they've been trying to use a wide angle lens or anything for that matter, you should drop us a line over at our Facebook page, facebook.com/imagedoctors. We'll be looking for your comments there, or insults, or whatever it is that you care to throw our way.
Hopefully comments.
Hopefully positive. But if you enjoyed
the show, this better.
Yes. Until next time, we wish you happy shooting.
Yep. Thanks. Bye-bye.